Welcome to FemTech at Work, the podcast where we explore the intersection of technology, health, and women's empowerment in the workplace. Hosted by me, Maaike Steinebach. This show will dive into the innovative solutions transforming women's health and well-being in the workplace. Join us as we chat with FemTech founders, industry leaders, and change makers who are pioneering advancements in FemTech and women's health. We discuss everything: menstrual health, reproductive rights, menopause, but also the challenges women face in the workplace and how innovation can overcome them. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting your FemTech journey, FemTech at Work is here to inspire and inform you about the future of health and wellness for women everywhere. Tune in and be part of the conversation. Hi, and welcome everybody to this episode of the podcast FemTech at Work with today's very special guest, Jenny Chu, who is the general manager of Faye Scientific in Hong Kong. Hi, Jenny. Thanks for joining.
Hi, Maaike. Privileged to join. Hi, everyone.
Tell me a bit about your background and how did you end up at Faye Scientific?
Cool. I came from a business background. My first job was actually in management consulting. I worked at McKinsey for a few years. So helping companies in terms of like growth strategy or entry strategy in Greater China. But then I realized my passion rests in education. Actually, after McKinsey, I joined education company to really apply my business skill set in an impact industry, I would say, to really empower people to make like informed choice. I would say it's one of my life mission. I thought I'm all set in education and I got my MBA, but at the same time, I got my part-time Master of Education as well until the pandemic hits. And I think it really shifts a lot of people's priority and their lives. And I'm being one of them, in which my education business suffered quite a bit. But at the same time, I think their industry that are booming. And my brother's is in the biotech industry back in the time. He has a full team of scientists back in the time, maybe around 20, 30 of them. And that's when he sees like booming business. And he asks for me to have a commercial background if I can join him and then support his business growth.
And you said yes.
Yes. When I said, okay, I will probably help you for the pandemic, just because I felt like this is something that I can probably handle. The science part is not as like sophisticated compared to cancer or some other much more sophisticated disease. But here I am. I think like 3 years after the COVID, I'm still with the company.
As you said, you were interested in impact, and obviously COVID and the impact you had has been massive. You did end up in some shape or form or impact. And now what you're doing as the next phase of the company is also very interesting. Can you maybe explain to our listeners a little bit what Faye Scientific does?
Sure. We're a high-growth biotech company, and we focus on innovative diagnostic solutions, both product and service, and especially in areas such as infectious disease, cancer, and also women's health.
Okay. So, obviously, this is a really interesting area. I think a lot more people, particularly following the pandemic, are much more accustomed to doing self-testing and preventative testing. Tell me a bit more specifically about what you guys are doing in women's health.
Women's health, it was actually quite interesting pivot for us because as you may imagine, when we grow from a team of only 30 people to during pandemic times, at one point we scaled the business up to 1,000 staff, including freelancer, part-time staff, swappers, on-site swappers and all. Obviously, we have to scale down after COVID, but as we are thinking along, okay, what should be next? I think that's when the time when we think of women's health as one of the potential new areas. As I'm sure we'll, much of the focus of the day later on will be on HPV. And I would say like HPV is actually like the next thing that we thought it would be interesting for us to apply our core technology and kind of the infrastructure that we build up into this space for a few reasons. I think one is like when our CEO, Ricky, my brother, really think about like similarities between HPV or cervical cancer with COVID, there are a few similarities. One is, I think both WHO and the local government has a mandate to eliminate that. So it's definitely in the policy. So I think that would definitely in favor of products or services to contribute to that. Secondly, I think it's the addressable market is huge. HPV, I would say almost universal virus that 80% of us will get it at some point. So the addressable market is big enough. I think third being like there are obvious pain points in this disease area that I think with innovative diagnostic solutions can potentially solve, which In short, the current gold standard method is an invasive way. We are using pap smear to get samples from women in order to know whether they are at risk, but that contributes to a low screening rate, which we see potential to innovate in this space. That's how we get into a woman's health.
Interesting, because I never looked at HPV and COVID in that same way, but it's super interesting. And actually, probably we can add a fourth pillar, which is there is no cure for HPV and also no cure for COVID, right? Or not necessarily. Very interesting. When you went into women's health, you identified HPV as a growth area. How did you guys come up with a urine test? Because that is the product you developed, right? As a diagnostic.
Correct. So I think we really start with the pain point, which I just mentioned about like the invasive and non-invasive options. And that pain point is shown in the data where, for example, in Hong Kong, the screening rate is as low as only around 30% of women will do screening regularly. And then I think through government statistics or through our customer research, we realized that the top reasons why people avoid doing it is because of the perceived pain and also embarrassment in doing the test. I think all these tests combined yell for kind of like a more non-invasive or more convenient options in really addressing that in order to raise that screening rate. Then it's why urine. So it comes back to like our core technology is actually like a sample preparation technology, which I can elaborate a little bit later. That really helps to increase kind of accuracy on liquid biopsy testing. If we think about like non-invasive options that are liquid and easy and convenient for the users, but also really can showcase how our technology can make a difference, urine is the obvious choice. And a lot of times when I talk to people and they ask, oh, but urine is a different track because HPV,
yeah,
vaginal and then vaginal discharge and maybe options like menstrual blood are a more natural way as a non-invasive option. So why urine? I would say for decades, scientists know urine is easier options. However, with current technologies, it's really hard to get to the accuracy that is as good as pap smear or maybe menstrual blood, for example. However, how it works is because we have vaginal discharge. And that's when the urine DNA goes with the urine discharge. And that's why urine A, it flush the discharge out, right? But however, the difficult part is because the discharge and with the HPV DNA in it is so limiting, the viral load is so long, it's hard to make the test very accurate. And that's how kind of our core technology FACIFY comes in. So maybe allow me to spend a minute explain what FACIFY, the core technology we are having. If we think about testing, I think there are three essential steps. The first step is sample preparation. So essentially, once you have the sample, you have to concentrate, purify it before it can get to the second part, which is the testing platform. So PCR test is a testing platform. Next generation sequencing is a testing platform, for example. And then the third part will be about data analytics, where you get the results and then you match it with the big data, the AI stuff, and then to see whether you have certain mutation or you're positive or not. So I think in the past, a lot of innovations happened around in the second and third part. And because sample preparations for most of people, there's a gold standard that already exists for over 30 years. People thought it's already enough. But if you can imagine that analogy, garbage in, garbage out. If your sample quality is not great to begin with, like urine sample, raw urine sample as a start, and even if you put into a fantastic testing platform, it will still didn't churn meaningful results. Our FACIFY technology is essentially concentration and purification technology. Basically, I always use an analogy of imagine like a glass of water where you put a grain of salt in it. Maybe it's really hard to detect that grain of salt. However, our technology can concentrate that glass of water into one drop of water, and we're able to capture that salt into that one. Before I put in the platform, then it's much easier to detect.
And Jenny, did you develop that technology specific for this urine test, or did you also develop already the FACIFY for the COVID or other tests?
Yes. So that's my brother's Ricky, basically PhD innovation. Well, this technology has already been developed for almost 10 years by now. I would say for the longest time, it was in developing phase because we have been looking into the right kind of like right disease area to really apply this technology that makes sense. And I would say HPV is kind of like the first that we truly use this technology to apply. And that's why I would say UHV is really the face baby, so to speak, because it's really one that can demonstrate the true power of our technology. But for future pipelines, we are definitely looking into like other cancers, other infectious disease, other women's health issues potentially that we can apply FACIFY into.
Amazing. based on this FACIFY technology, how does the accuracy now compare to the conventional Pap smears?
Yes. First, maybe I need to explain a little bit, because as I educate the market, I realize that people always mix up with different concepts. There's Pap smear, there's HPV test. First, I have to explain what the difference is. And to start off, maybe I can explain how cervical cancer develops. Over 95% of cervical cancer comes from HPV. And then with the existence of HPV, it might regress, meaning your immune system can kill itself. Or it might progress, in which like it will create like cancerous cells in your cervical parts and eventually turn into cancer. So in the past, when we think about Pap smear, essentially it's like we swap kind of like the cells from your cervical parts. We use microscope to check whether they're abnormal cells. But whereas HPV test, essentially it goes to the root of the whole journey to really see if the virus exists. So arguably, it's a much earlier screening test you can get. And I think data has shown that HPV test is actually has a much higher sensitivity compared to Pap smear. Because if you think about Pap smear, if we need human to use microscope to detect the cancerous cells. So it's more human error prone compared to the HPV test. So I think that's that. And I think there are a lot of papers already saying the real sensitivity of a Pap smear test is around 50 to 60%.
Yeah, wow.
That's why I think WHO and as recent for Hong Kong Health Authority 3 years ago, we already have embraced that HPV test is a more accurate test and already using that as the screening method. But honestly, for a layman woman, we won't tell the difference because the collection method is still very much the same. It's still using the swab, cervical swab, and send it to lab. It's just the testing platform is different. Now it goes to then using urine in this case. Urine HPV compared to swab-based HPV. And I think in our internal validation, we see that there's 99% concordance with the HPV swab samples that we have. But in order to really change the landscape, we can't just settle with the internal validation. So actually, we start to collaborating with top universities. I think we start this study first off in China, but we also will have one in Hong Kong very soon. In the China study, we already collect over thousands of women's real samples. Both we ask them to have a urine sample, but at the same time, we have a physician swab, cervical swab samples. And then we both run the HPV test. And we recognize that actually there are over 97 concordance with the current gold standard physician swab HPV with our urine test. The concordance is very, very high.
Wow, that's incredible. And I'm so excited about it because as we already discussed many, many times, it just creates more options, right? So with 39% of women in Hong Kong actually testing and doing Pap smears, we still have an upside of 60% of women that actually need to be tested. Even if they use another product, at least we can get the screening rates up. What has the feedback been so far? And do you test the feedback from women, their experience?
Yes, for sure. I think, Michael, just now you mentioned about the point about increased screening rate, which we have already seen in the market. One of the local study we do in Hong Kong is we partner with an NGO and we distribute 1,000 urine HPV samples to women in the community. And of this 1,000 women cohort, only 22% have screened regularly. So it's even lower than the average that I shared earlier, meaning that these majority of these people have never done a Pap. But they are willing to say, okay, urine, it seems like it's easy enough. I'm willing to give it a try. But interestingly, what we see is like of those that eventually they detect HPV positive, now they face a choice. Hey, you actually really do need a Pap. And the compliance rate goes up to 85% compared to 22%. Truly, I think if you give them the option, if you make it less painful or less embarrassing, I think more people are willing to take so.
I have one question though. Basically, when the government publishes these numbers around the screening rates, right? I guess these are normally the doctors that provide this information. But in your case, you can actually buy the test at Manning's, right? Will, and how does it this get included in the government numbers?
Right. I will say it's still a new journey. I will argue we are almost like the first. We pioneered the self-test concept in Hong Kong with COVID. I think many of you might heard of my direct-to-consumer brand, which is Indicate. We use the brand Indicate. And in the HPV or the cervical cancer screening space, we are also kind of the first to go into this direct-to-consumer route. And I will say it's just the beginning. We're still trying to see how we can increase more people to adopt it. I will say people light up when they heard about, wow, you can actually use urine to do it. But I would say there are still a few barriers. One is think about, I used the past 10 to 15 minutes to explain the difference between a PEP and an HPV, how HPV contributes to cervical cancer. So there are a lot of education works that need to be one done, and that's first. And two is, without kind of a big volume picked up, I will say the cost, it will be still high for every woman in Hong Kong to use it, for example. In order to drive the volume, it cannot just be a single company's effort. We have to create an ecosystem that has to combine with government, insurance, corporates, and innovative solutions companies like us to really join force into make it happen.
Yeah, I agree. And I would add one other, which is pharma, which is the ones that do the vaccination, right? Because the great thing about HPV is that there's a vaccine, then there is a urine test, a menstrual blood test, a pap smear, hopefully going forward, also a treatment. It's kind of all the elements coming together to actually meet some of those guidelines and eradicate HPV, right?
Correct. In order for that holy grail to happen, certainly, I think D2C, we will continue to put effort to it. But I think it's really like government endorsing non-invasive solutions like urine as kind of one of the options for gold standard. But in order to do that, you do really need clinical trials conducted by top medical KOL. To prove that, I think there's like cervical cancer screening guidelines, and there's a committee of doctors that sit in that guidelines. We need to change that guideline before all the hospitals and all the physicians start adopting that based on the guideline.
We're honest. How are you advocating for that? Are you actively talking to the people involved to try and make that change?
Correct. As we recognize that clinical study is a must-go for us, I think we are quite privileged that we partner with both the gynecologist department chair lady from both Hong Kong U and COHK. And we are already launching or about to launch like clinical studies around urine HPV. I'll say both of them see kind of the potential. So we are very excited and we are very confident about the accuracy data will show something that would have some impact on the eventual guideline change.
Yeah, amazing. Oh, that's so exciting. I'm so happy for that. We can talk separately, but I would love to try to see how I can support some of those advocacy issues. One thing we did not talk about at all, but which I find super exciting, is that this HPV test is also available for men.
Yes. When we think about women's health, obviously women have to advocate for our own benefits and all, but I will say for HPV case, we need both men and women to participate. Why? Because HPV is a sexually transmitted infection, meaning that even if we clear all women from HPV, if the men continuously infect with HPV, it will pass back to the woman at some point. If we really think of eliminating cervical cancer as the end goal, I think both men and women have to participate in that. You may see, I think vaccine companies like MSD already start to advocate a lot on men vaccination. But in the past, the participation wasn't as high just because, I mean, I'm sure a lot of guys are responsible, but for them to take up the actions and have the urgency to do so, I think that's one. But two is the current cancer rate doesn't seem as threatening compared to cervical cancer, but I think it's changing. For example, in the US, the absolute numbers that get head and neck cancer each year in the US already surpassed that of cervical cancer. So these HPV-induced cancer in men, I think could be a potential reason or push factor for men to really take actions. And then as for just maybe add one more point, and then as for testing, I think men HPV test has never been heard of in the past because if men, even they want to do it, it's really difficult to do so because you need to go through an invasive urethral swab, which is even more painful than the cervical swab, just by imagining how painful that is. But now with urine, actually, then you can make both invasive options for both men and women, hopefully really increase the screening rate from men as well going forward.
Because that was going to be my next question. Obviously, you are Hong Kong born and raised as a company. You're active in Hong Kong. But are there similar diagnostic tests already available elsewhere in the world that use urine?
I will say we are world's first. That's why.
Oh, wow.
That's like really special.
Amazing. Oh, my God. That's so cool. And do you have plans to expand outside of Hong Kong?
So certainly. Especially if we think about, we always design products with the customer needs in mind. And other than Hong Kong, which arguably is already a more developed place, there are other, for example, Asia countries where I think the sex stigma is even stronger, or even some Middle Eastern country, because for religious reason, they can't even do any screening at all. we see huge potential there. I think definitely in our longer term goal, that is something that we want to look into. But there are a few barriers that we have to overcome. The first one is I think we have to really understand kind of the regulatory barrier of each of the country. Secondly, we have to find a trustable, credible lab partner, because ultimately it's a lab test, it's not a rapid test. And then third is we also need to ensure our current kind of lab flow to conduct this test is optimized enough such that we can export and for other labs to follow.
And I guess then a distribution channel, right? How do you bring it to market? Is it as on an e-com platform? Is it through retail stores or pharmacies? Or is it indeed as part of a government program? Because I assume a lot of other countries have similar agendas, maybe than the Hong Kong government, on trying to eradicate HPV and cervical cancer.
Correct.
Coming back then to the education, right? Every time I sit on the bus or on the ding ding, I see a big poster on the side of the road that said, get tested for HPV. But what are the kind of big challenges in educating the public around HPV?
So I'll say in Hong Kong, actually, like the awareness on HPV is pretty high, thanks to the vaccine company with their decades of heavy marketing. But from our learning is when it comes to HPV testing, that awareness just drops significantly. People are aware of pap smear. If we ask women about pap smear, they are aware of it and they think that it's part of what they need to do in the regular checkup. But we ask them HPV tests, they're like, oh my God, what is that? Is that STI related? Then they start to put in like kind of labels around like HPV testing, so to speak. I think that is definitely one reason that maybe the awareness is low with the stigma. I think the second part is still the urgency part. I think none of us would think that cancer would be with us. And again, like cervical cancer is a slowly developed cancer. Usually it takes 10 to 15 years before it turns into cancer. People have the excuse to not act immediately. I think that's another reason. And of course, the third reason is what I emphasize a few times is the perceived pain and embarrassment of the current testing method that keeps more women away from that.
Yeah. And I think you raised an interesting point. When you talk to people around cancer, it all of a sudden becomes very urgent. But I think we also have to be realistic that there's only a small percentage of patients that have HPV actually develop cancer, because any other virus like the COVID virus, eventually, if your immune system is strong enough, should eradicate and get out of your system. And for some people, it might take 1-2 years to get out. But a lot of the strains of the virus do actually get solved by the body regularly. I think the problem we also have with HPV is that we make it so specific as a sexual transmissible disease. It could also be better just to frame it to say, hey, it's very normal. There's nothing to be ashamed about. It happens to a lot of people. But in the worst case, yes, if you don't screen for it, you have the potential of getting cervical cancer. And I heard the number the other day that in China, about 40 million women would have HPV. Does that ring a bell?
40 million.
Yeah.
Wow. It's possible. I'm thinking because we know that roughly like 80% of people will get it at some point in life. And some of the statistics can show usually around 10 to 20% of the women may get HPV positive. So that 41 million may sound crazy, but it's not that crazy, given they have
information. Exactly. And do you feel that the innovation that you are driving, that it is helping just the wider understanding about the options that women have in Hong Kong, but also educate them around the necessity to take care of your health and well-being? I kind of feel that there is more awareness, even though probably not in all levels of society. But do you feel the change as well?
You mean feel the change about?
Well, the fact that you guys are bringing these solutions to market, that there is a vaccine, that there's more and more femtech companies bringing solutions, that is helping change the perception around the urgency for women to take care of their health and well-being.
No, absolutely. I think the pandemic, for all the negative impact it has bring to us, the only positive impact I would say is the awareness that health is really important. And there are solutions, innovative solutions that can help us to be healthier, not just rushing to the doctors or hospital all the time. So I think that behavior is definitely there. And I do see it's an unavoidable force, the trend that will keep going. So that's that. I'll say like people like you that really try to do more advocacy around this space and making more like-minded people, be like innovation provider like us, government, like insurance, other pharma companies, so on and so forth. I think that awareness is kind of a very first step for people to actually aware that this is an issue, which I bet most of the people might not even have that awareness. So I'm definitely things are changing and improving.
Yeah, I feel this really needs to be a collaboration, even though everybody is for profit and everybody is trying to also create a profitable business out of this. But if we go about it alone, we will just have so little opportunity to have an impact and to reach the people that need to be reached. So I strongly feel that a collaborative effort and advocating for women's health as a whole can basically bring everybody forward. But as you rightfully pointed out, we have to educate the women, we have to educate the insurers, we have to educate the government, we have to educate the doctors and the healthcare providers and explain to them and teach them about all the different options that are now available. It's a bit of a journey. How have you enjoyed the journey so far? What have been your most important learning on working in women's health?
Personally, I'm actually very glad that I'm in take part of women's health. I mean, even in my company, I would say majority of my leadership team is still men. I mean, even for UNHCR itself, I'm definitely having a big voice in my team in terms of explaining them how kind of the traditional process work and all that, because I don't want a stereotyping that men cannot develop solutions for a woman. I think certainly it's true, but I do think they're also amazing than men that wants to provide a solution for a woman. But we need women to be an active participant or input provider during the process. Personally, I definitely felt like it's a very meaningful cause. And at the same time, I always believe that women are unique in terms of naturally we are more caring, we are more like collaborative. And just a few occasions that I joined some of these women's community, I already felt the warmth that we really want to. It's not just about, okay, I grow my business. It's not a zero-sum game. I really do believe it's a collaborative effort that we can make more people aware of this space and gradually grow the pie to become a bigger pie. So really personally enjoying the journey of knowing other kind of change maker, and then together we bring some potential solutions of how we can really bring more awareness and solutions in this space.
And then following up on that, it's interesting because you are not a femtech company. You are considered a biotech company. Do you think that makes a difference in the way the market perceive you or they talk about you? Had you only been a women's health company or a femtech company, do you think it would have been different?
I don't know whether this label is helpful or not helpful. Certainly because of UNHCR, we start to get into more of these femtech company, but I see it more universal as in ultimately we are just trying to have a solution that address an issue, be it is a men's health issue or women's health issue. And given HPV, for example, it's an issue that is like gender neutral. I definitely see that with this solutions, it helps me to get into a more specific community. But I do think ultimately, we just want to get people to be healthier. It doesn't matter whether we're a biotech or a femtech company.
But what is super interesting is that you recently raised a significant amount of money, right? What was it, $34 million? Well, I guarantee you there is no company in Asia that is focused on women's health that has raised that amount of money. That is amazing. If possible, can you share a little bit around the expansion plans and how you guys are planning to use that money to grow the company?
For sure. I think one reason why we got to this money is really kind of like the potential of Basify, as I mentioned earlier in the beginning about technology and the potentials, how it can potentially change urine as the new blood, meaning that urine can be an even more non-invasive way to do more tests. Like, and HPV is just our first step to start. And I think because with HPV already commercialized, investors see the potential that we are truly applying our technology into something and we are already running a business. So I think this is the reason why we are able to raise that round. For further expansion plan, for one is for these current innovative products, definitely we will invest significant amount of money to really keep on the commercializing effort to really drive the adoption. I think that's that. And as I mentioned, in order for everyone to play a role, we do need to have the clinical studies and all those things to set up. So I think a lot of the money will proceeds will also go into clinical trial as well. And then I think the part will be the R&D part, because as I mentioned, HPV or cervical cancer is just kind of our first step. And potentially there are more pipelines into potential other cancers, other women's health disease and infectious disease that we're looking into. The third part of the proceeds will go into kind of continuous R&D development as well.
Yeah, amazing. Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so happy for you guys. And I'm also excited that we are seeing these very positive use cases for companies that are doing innovation in women's health. Many, many congratulations to you and Ricky. We're almost at the end of this podcast. I just want to ask you one final question. Apart from the Facify and the urine, is there any other innovation or technology that you've recently heard about that you're super excited about or inspired about?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the idea is because, for example, using HPV ultimately, because it's something that with medical implications, it's something that definitely needs to go through the clinical trial and also like medical guidelines, so to speak. Recently, I have been thinking, oh, is there some other fields that potentially we can do it on a more wellness space where potentially we can kind of speed up the go-to-market and potentially have support more people because the population size is also naturally bigger. And I think one of the idea that I was thinking and also get inspired by the recent Women's Health Conference is actually hormone health. Actually, it comes to my surprise that how many, even for corporates, like paying more attention on menopause, but even before menopause, right? I talked to some of my friends who are at the pregnancy journey and they told me how hormones really screw up kind of how they used to live their life and all that. I will see it's an up and coming topic. When I do customer research, when I ask about women's, what are the top health concerns, it's an emerging, like most people say, oh, hair, skin, weight loss, and all those things. But I start seeing hormone health potentially could become a new potential. I'm just thinking out loud, if we can have a personalized hormone test tracker that is easy for us to do, maybe using urine or maybe using saliva, I don't know what that is yet, and it's cheap enough for women are willing to motivate to do it regularly, maybe potentially can pair with personalized kind of treatment options. It could be like hormone replacement therapy, it could be supplements, be it what that is. I thought that would be quite cool and quite impactful in the woman's health journey.
It's so amazing that you mentioned that just the increased awareness around menopause and hormonal health. I think it's a little bit of a chicken and egg, right? You look at social media and a lot of influences around beauty, so that naturally women think about skin and hair. But as we educate more women, they are also starting to understand that actually the real beauty and the real health comes from the inside and that there is a connection between the brain and the heart and the gut and the reproductive organs. Actually creating solutions for those kind of issues are super, super necessary and really lagging behind. But again, it's about educating the women that this is good for them and then creating a solution that is affordable, because that comes back to the first point that you mentioned. We need more people to use the tests and the products to make it more accessible and affordable as well. I agree on your excitement. I think that would be very, very positive. And then my little dream is that, you know, over time, because you know there is now a blood test to do endometriosis, but how cool would it be if there would also be like a urine test in which you can test for endometriosis, right? I mean, that would, 1 in 7 women now have endometriosis. That would be a game changer for so many women. Anyway, lots to brainstorm about. Thank you so much for being a wonderful, inspirational guest on my podcast today. And just for the speakers, if you enjoyed listening to Jenny, please like the podcast and subscribe to the podcast so that I can continue to show these amazing founders and show the rest of the world their amazing work and the things that they are doing. You will also find all the information about Indicate and Face Scientific in the show notes, as well as Jenny's LinkedIn in case you want to continue the conversation with her. But Jenny, thank you so much for being here today. And thank you so much for having this conversation with me. And all the best of luck with all the amazing work that you're doing.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks, everyone.